Chapter 2. With Mr. Grummidge leading the way, I stepped finally, hesitantly, upon the deck of the Seahawk. A man was waiting for us. He was a small man. Most seafaring men are small, barely taller than I, and dressed in a frayed green jacket over a white shirt that was none too clean. His complexion was weathered dark, his chin ill-shaven. His mouth was unsmiling. His fingers fidgeted and his feet shuffled. His darting, unfocused eyes, set deep in a narrow, ferret-like face, gave the impression of one who is constantly on watch for threats that might appear from any quarter at any moment. "Miss Doyle," Mr. Grummidge intoned by way of introduction, "both Captain Jaggery and the first mate are ashore. May I present the second mate, Mr. Keach?" "Miss Doyle," this Mr. Keach said to me, speaking in an unnecessarily loud voice, "since Captain Jaggery isn't aboard, I've no choice but to stand in his place. But it's my strong opinion, miss, that you should take another ship for your passage to America." "And I," Mr. Grummidge cut in before I could respond, "can allow of no such thing." This was hardly the welcome I had expected. "But Mr. Grummidge," I said, "I'm sure my father would not want me to be traveling without—" Mr. Grummidge silenced my objections with an upraised hand. "Miss Doyle," he said, "my orders were clear and allow for no other construction. I met you. I brought you here. I had you placed under the protection of this man who, in the momentary absence of Captain Jaggery and the first mate, fulfilled his obligation by signing a receipt for you." To prove his point, Mr. Grummidge waved a piece of paper at me. I might have been a bale of cotton. "Therefore, Miss Doyle," he rushed on, "nothing remains save to wish you a most pleasant voyage to America." Putting action to words, he tipped his hat, and before I could utter a syllable, he strode down the gangplank toward the shore. "But Mr. Grummidge," I called desperately.